Welcome to Lamestream here on the 440 Sports Network. My name is Braden Gall. Happy NFL Draft Week. You can follow me on Twitter.com at Braden Gall. Blue Sky as well, by the way.
My name is Steve Cavendish. You can follow me on Twitter or Blue Sky or Instagram or wherever you want to at Scavendish. If you like this show, the one you're listening to right now, please rate it. Please review it. Please subscribe to it. But mostly, just tell somebody that you know that you listen to Lamestream Sports and they should be listening too.
Our guest today on the show, reporter for the Nashville Business Journal, Adam Sitchko, whose headline on the Nashville Business Journal is, quote, "The business of outrage and business is good. Clay Travis runs Outkick from his Franklin Holmes bonus room. From there, he takes the nation's pulse." You and I will have some conversation about Outkick and about Clay Travis and about the business of outrage. Absolutely, business is good. But I'm wondering where you think, Steve, this type of business is going. The story is a very difficult story to write, and I think they did an excellent job in the Nashville Business Journal. Go subscribe, by the way. It's only like $100 a year. It's worth it to learn about our city. And if you, in the process, want to donate to the Nashville Banner, go ahead and do that too, nashvillebanner.com. But it's a difficult subject to write about. I think you did an excellent job, and so we're going to talk with Adam. You and I will have some thoughts about all this afterward. But I think it's a really interesting conversation with Adam, and I appreciate his work. It's been a long time coming, actually. They've been working on this for what feels like, 8 or 9 months, I guess. Before we do that, however, Steve Cavendish, Lamestream Sports is brought to you by
8th and Roast.
8th and Roast.
Roast.
Charlotte Avenue location, airport, Vanderbilt West End, as well as on what street?
8th.
8th.
And Roast.
And Roast. They take a ton of painstaking time and effort to roast their beans. They select their beans. Max, my guy, the roaster down at Roaster HQ, excellent, excellent work. They put so much time and effort into the beans. Their beans are just better. We roast them at our house, of course. You can pick them up at a grocery store near you. They are phenomenal. But also, you got great breakfast sandwiches. It's a great place to get a little work done if you need to kill some time. Great place to get a great cup of coffee. The prices are... The quality of the coffee is so much better than the competitors, and the price is about the same. So there's no reason not to go to one of their 4 locations across the city or buy their beans at a grocery store near you.
Has your wife figured out that you have replaced her beans?
I don't want to say this too loud, Steve, but no. She's working from home today. No, she hasn't figured it out, which is fine with me because then I get the beans I want. That I like. Nice. Now, all the beans at 8th and Roast are delicious, but the tasting notes do differ. And so make sure you try them all and then find the one that you like and that you prefer. And again, great local company here in Nashville, working hard to provide a quality product for the community, both again at grocery stores and one of the 4 locations. Breakfast sandwiches, you got it. It's great. It's a great location. It's great business. Great, great folks. Go over there and buy some 8th and Roast coffee. Go to 8th and Roast, everybody.
Go to 8th and Roast.
All right. You and I will be back afterward. NFL draft is obviously a huge topic this week. We will have a lot of coverage for you guys next week on the show as it pertains to the Titans and what took place in the NFL draft. So we're going to kind of put pause on that, let it play out over the weekend. We'll get back to it next weekend. But you and I will also talk about Outkick and the direction of media in this city. But here was our conversation with Nashville Business Journal reporter Adam Sitchko. Adam, welcome to the show. Good to have you. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you doing this morning?
Doing well.
I'm dying to know, what was the pitch for the Clay Travis story like? Who did you have to pitch in order to get this? And like, is this like publisher level involved? And like, what was the kind of the full fleshed out sort of, we got to do this story kind of thing?
So my editor actually had me go back and try to find the origin nugget, because this is an idea we had been chewing on. It really came about a year ago. There was a new spokesperson who joined Outkick and just sent sort of a generic email to various members of the national media, just introducing himself and, you know, hey, here's our latest monthly, you know, online numbers and look at our growth. And if you're ever interested in, you know, writing something about that, let me know. And that kind of got our editor and I thinking along that lines. But it was a much different, you know, what he was envisioning as a possible story was much different than how we wanted to tackle it. And we finally got around to to really going full bore on it last fall. But it was, I'm paraphrasing him here, but he likes to say that any story that you want to tell, you can tell it in our region right now. That there's a lot of national level things that are showing up, manifesting themselves in our backyard. And this struck us as an example of one of those things.
What were the conversations like about those, like, how are we going to do this? What are we going to do this? You said it sort of evolved. Obviously, editor Eric Schneider feels the need to write a piece about it on digital before it even comes out. So what were the considerations, and how did you guys have conversations about going into what it was going to be versus what it ultimately turned into?
Well, I knew I was holding a live wire the whole time, which was exciting as a reporter, but also, you know, really makes you check yourself constantly at every step of the way. But we saw a story for our audience, not least in this trend of we've seen more of this conservative media showing up in our region. And there had been a lot written. I think there was at the end of 2022, the New York Times was writing a story about, can Nashville become Hollywood for conservatives? And they're pointing to the Daily Wire, you know, moving from Los Angeles here, and they're pointing to, you know, for a time Parler when that was a thing.
Yeah.
And it kind of struck me as like, well, you know, Clay's like an OG in this camp. I mean, he's been here for a number of years doing this. And he himself, I think, has transformed from what he was doing 10 years ago, 5 years ago, into what you see today. And on a national level, I mean, there's a business in outrage. There's a business in the culture wars and identity politics and trying to dig in on what that looked like and get under the hood with someone again who was right here in our backyard was a highly intriguing opportunity that also again made me we tried to walk very carefully down that road of, you know, what were we trying to report and what were we not going to, you know, there were things we couldn't really adjudicate in that story, or that we would have gotten really bogged down in trying to, you know, go through the scorecard of, you know, the picks he got right, the picks he got wrong. It struck us as we dug in that, like, that people are coming to him for opinions. And I don't know that they're necessarily coming to him because they believe he bats 900 necessarily.
Spoiler, he does not.
Well, but I think that's interesting though, because I go through and I've read it a few times. It's excellent work, and I think it's,
yeah,
as someone who's known him for a long time, I it all tracks exactly perfectly. There are plenty of things that I've highlighted in here where I'm like, all right, that was a moment where we could have said, all right, this is what he's saying, but here's sort of the reality of the situation. So you said that's something we could have gotten bogged down in very quickly. How do you avoid that in the reporting part of this process? Because, you know, we all claim objectivity is the key, but there's also, like, truth is an important part of journalism as well. So I agree, it would be impossible to write this and then try to put the scorecard together. But how did you guys actually talk and think about that in terms of presenting information that he's doing, things that he's saying?
I think it was, you know, he's a reflection and product of the times. And that was the main thrust that we were trying to drive home. And the, you know, more so the fact that, look, he's got a stage and it's, you know, again, like, that microphone is louder than ever. I mean, he's on 400 plus radio stations syndicated nationwide for 3 hours, you know, 5 days a week. He's on, you know, he's on with Martha McCollum. He's on with Jesse Waters. He's on other Fox News programming. And he's doing all these outkick work as well. So I think it was more about him as that avatar for where a lot of the discourse, where we are as a country right now. And he's not the only example of that, but again, he's the one, he's kind of that thread locally that connects us to, you know, what we see playing out on a nationwide level.
I'm fascinated by the Limbaugh kind of piece of it. He got Limbaugh's slot on the radio, but he didn't keep all that audience. I mean, I think Limbaugh was on like 650 or 700 stations. Clay's on 400. Is there any indication of kind of like how that show is performing nationally? It's I mean, it could be really hard without drilling down into, you know, a billion markets to look at syndicated radio performance.
That's a good question, and one that I don't have a clear answer to, because I think more of our focus centered on the Outkick piece of it, and then, you know, as much as anything, what Clay does next also was of high interest to me.
There was a great thing that you dropped in at the end of that, where you said, you know, he's got 2 years left on this contract, he could blow it all up and do it all over again, which I found to be fascinating.
We've seen people, again, here in Nashville do that. You know, Shannon Terry and folks like that. I mean, how many times they've built and sold a business and then turned right around and built and sold another one. I did sense, you know, he talked a little bit, this didn't make the story, but he and I talked a little bit about, you know, for a lot of years, I mean, he called every single shot. And of course he thinks he's the best shot caller, and then he's right all the time. And then when you sell your company to somebody else, there's a little bit of that. You've got to turn the keys of the car over. I mean, you're not, you know, maybe you're riding shotgun, but you're not controlling everything there. And so there's a little bit of, he's still doing a lot of Outkick things, but I don't get the sense that he's involved in the editorial meetings. You know, Brandon, like you were, you know, mentioning too, it's like, I mean, they've got a stable of writers, and on the content side, you know, he's doing his show. And he's helping with a few of those. He's helping those other shows by making appearances on them and trying to bring in other talent. But he's not, you know, there's an adjustment there where you're not making, you know, your own decisions all the time on the direction of it. And so there's a little bit of an open door there that I think he senses with the end of his contract coming, that he's kind of intrigued to see what's next.
In Eric's quick little editorial kind of previewing the piece, of course, it's on the front page of the print version this week. The quote is, whether Travis or an Outkick is more cause or effect is an interesting but irrelevant question. They are a mirror just the same. And you mentioned sort of the emblematic point of this time. Steve and I talk about this all the time, about sort of the cause and effect, or even the chicken or the egg, whatever it may be, about sort of our attention spans as consumers in the media and the thing that we want, which is like 45, clearly like 45 to 60 second videos, and as like a population, versus like really good nutritional content, information, reporting about our community, about a topic, about whatever it may mean. And you've already said, like, look, Clay's microphone is one of the biggest and most powerful in the city in terms of its national reach. And he even kind of like, so I'm curious what you think personally about what he thinks. Because he says, like, I'm going to do this as long as I'm helping the world. And like, he's got, you know, and I think he's, to your point about calling shots off the field, I think he's brilliant from a business perspective. Do you get a sense of what he believes the impact of the words are and the impact of the microphone, that he's just meeting people where they are? Or is it, hey, I'm, because he, or am I leading people to a certain thing? Because we can complain about polarization, we can complain about all this other stuff, and you write about it in the story, but at the end of the day, without people like him, it also, maybe we wouldn't be in the situation that we are in terms of the polarization and the content. Does that, I think the cause and effect is way more interesting than Eric's letting on, for example.
There's a story Politico did about him about 7 years ago or so, right around the time when Colin Kaepernick took a knee for the first time in the anthem, and there's a quote from Clay in that story about telling his wife, well, this is not great for the country, but this will be good for business.
Really good for me.
And I think there's a little, you know, he spoke to both sides of that also
and then he put him on the cover of his book. It's good business.
It's good business.
Again, he rails against cancel culture, and that also gives him a lot of juicy material to work with. I think when you look at the pandemic, he spoke to both elements, I think, of what you're bringing up, where he adamantly believes he was correct on the stances he took, and believes that he's been borne out to be right about that today, and also faced the reality as someone with a 3-hour daily sports show that there was no product. He talks about he believes like OutKick is giving us what we really want instead of what we say we want, which Steve can step in here and talk more eloquently than I about how long that's been, a dilemma in journalism. we face that here at the Business Journal. I mean, it's not the same kind of story, but that underlying element is the same of the good nutritional content. Like, again, what we see in our own metrics of what readers tell us that they want to read versus what we want to put out there.
When you have an interview like this, the term you used is live wire, and I think it's a great term for thinking about kind of like walking into an interview like that. But you go into an interview like that, and I always try to get a sense of, particularly when somebody's trying to sell me something, or they've got a definite, and I know you're talking about like ideology, like, they're selling themselves, or they're selling this company, or they're selling this thing. I'm always trying to get a sense of what do they believe versus what are they, what are they kind of pitching to me? How much of that's going through your head as you're in this interview, and how much can you really know?
My top thought on that is if he's wearing a mask, he's certainly not going to take it off in front of a reporter.
No.
with his spokesperson who's flown in from New York City.
He wasn't alone in the bonus room. Okay. All right.
No. His spokesperson was present for almost every interview I did for that story, which I think I interpreted more as a Fox thing and less as a Clay thing. But as much as anything, I took cues from an interview I did with his first producer on local radio who suggested he saw some daylight there in years past to what Steve's asking. At least a little bit between what he really believes versus what he's saying into the mic. But over the course of that conversation with that producer, I mean, he kept time and again, I felt fairly convincingly telling me, like, at least from his, from his vantage point, watching and listening the present day, that he does believe what he's saying. And there's no way, it's hard to have that Bush Putin, I looked into his soul, moment. And again, that was also an area where we were mindful, that felt like a spot where we could get really, tongue-tied on, trying to unravel that. When again, I think to us, the broader point was, him being that embodiment of so much of what's going on at a national level right now. And I do think he has aspirations to try to influence more of the national political debate as opposed to the sports debate. But one place where he stands to benefit, honestly, is like all those lines to feel so blurred now between sports, pop culture, entertainment, media, politics. It feels like we're all, it's one big stew of things that's been thrown together these days.
Shout out Jordan Tinkle, of course, friend of the pod. Quote, Clay can tell you it's raining when the sun is shining, and he can tell you it's shining when it's raining. He's that talented and smart. Couldn't agree more with a quote at all. It's funny you said how blurred everything is and how interwoven everything is. What's interesting is that was sort of the takeoff of OutKick, and what Clay, I think what he figured out, and I think he said it out loud before, which is that like the sports audience is fairly conservative, and it's just been sitting there untapped for a long time, overlapping with politics. We've done this whole like separate, right, stick to sports. We've done that as like it's turned into like this weird meme on the internet now, stick to sports. And he blasts identity politics in your story. That's the quote you wrote, but he used identity politics and did the thing he was railing against to an extraordinary level of success. How do you, I guess, and I'm even having a difficult time in this conversation with you separating that from the success of OutKick and the business model. Like I acknowledge that it's hard to do that. So how did you feel the pull when writing this? He says, Travis blasts identity politics. Well, he blasts identity politics and identity politics is the thing that made him all the money. So I don't, I'm, how did you feel as a writer, the pull of like not falling into that? And I feel, maybe I've already asked you this, but I'm feeling the pull of it right now.
Yes, I'm feeling the pull of it again, as you talk about it. And that, I think, is one reason this story took a little time on our end, because there were a lot of those moments where in writing various drafts, it was like, we found ourselves getting pulled too far down that path. And Clay, I think, is the only one who could answer that question. I'm probably never going to be able to spend enough time with him to really under the hood figure out the answer to that question. But again, I think it also just like reflects a lot of where the discourse is these days.
Yep.
I don't have a clean answer. Honestly, I think that's one of the things that I liked about the story, was just there isn't this neat ending to it. There isn't, it's, you know, not only is this ongoing thing, but it's this gnarly ongoing thing. And, you know, we're all trying to, you know, in a number of different issues right now that are being debated, like we're all trying to pull apart the things that you're talking about in this example.
You've had a couple of different stories by virtue of the fact that, I mean, you're the main reporter at the Business Journal. There's a lot of national news kind of coming through Nashville right now. What's your sense of when you write something like this, this is something that's going to get picked up or kind of like pushed around the network of business journal properties. Another good example of this is you had a scoop this week on Oracle, and then potentially move, Larry Ellison, I think, blurted out in front of you at a healthcare conference that, you know, that he's going to move the headquarters, just the full headquarters flagship here to Nashville.
Don't tell anybody, Larry.
Don't tell anybody, Mr. Senator. And so, you know,
the wealthiest person in the world, he can say whatever he wants into the mic.
How much of these are these stories kind of getting played around the Business Journal's network?
The Oracle one in particular is for sure. I mean, that touches on, they're in a number of markets
across
the country. Yeah. So that has gotten some play there and gets into an interesting conversation of, especially post pandemic, you know, what is a headquarters these days?
Yeah.
What does that signify? But the start of your question, Steve, made me think of another thing that Eric, our editor, has been talking about this year with us, all five reporters here, which is doing coverage that is reflective of the moment we're in. So if people picked up a story and didn't know what year was written, they could figure it out by nature of what we were writing about, as opposed to some more, you know, some more of the generic business stories that, you know, that could be a 2018 thing or it could be a 2024 thing. Those are vastly different time periods. And so that's, I think, as much as anything, part of our inspiration for pursuing this story at the outset, in context of what we all anticipate to be facing this year. Doing more stories that are reflective, speaking to the moment that we're in, as opposed to, again, some stories that could be placed in any number of different years.
There's some like keywords I've got in my head already. If it's like if I see Tony G, if I see Crane, if I see Tower, if I see East Bank, if I see building, like I'm going to know exactly what era of Nashville you guys were talking about.
Transit,
right. I'm curious about the future of the media, like, because obviously you sort of end the story in sort of this, like, what is the future for Clay Travis? You mentioned Shannon Terry, who sort of run the same play three times very effectively. And I think he does kind of, I think, and I don't know if you did this on purpose, I'm hoping you did, but I think your last quote and your last line in the story, which is, quote, "The money is only significant in the context of it allowing me the freedom to say exactly what I want to say. And I have that," Travis said. "There is no cancel culture, right? Like, what are you going to do?" I think he's kind of telling on himself there. a little bit, because I don't believe that cancel culture is a thing other than like Al Franken, basically. I don't think anyone's actually been canceled in this country. Do you get a sense that like conservative media, like a lot of progressive and mainstream media, down significantly? Daily Wire has plummeted, based here in Nashville. You allude to them in the story. You know, the more fringe websites on both left and right sides are plummeting in terms of viewership and readership. Outkick is doing a little bit better, probably, I assume, because sports is sort of their it's propped up by sports. But what is the future of this space? Like, do you think Nashville continues to be a hub for these type of companies, or do you think these companies existed in this certain time and space and found a way to be successful, and that maybe we evolve beyond that? What's your thought now after spending some time with him on the future of this type of media?
That's a great question. I'd say too, Outkick also benefits. I think they do benefit through the Fox ownership as well. I mean, they're the only non-Fox branded thing on the masthead of their, of, you know, the Fox News website.
That placement is huge. And yeah. I was glad you mentioned that in the story, because, you know, showing up on that homepage and showing up in front of the, of that just monster viewership, I mean, readership is just, it's everything for them.
And they've got in the News River on that page, they've got their own, Outkick has their own slot that they can rotate. Now it's, you know, of all the headlines, I mean, it's, you know, you're scrolling for a little while to get to that slot, but it's all, but also again, it's there, and you're to your point, kind of scooping up a lot of those eyeballs. You know, it's, I think in the, you know, I can see a future for more media companies here. Looking at the fundamentals of, you know, you look at where these companies are coming from, and they're coming from the major markets that are just much more expensive places to do business. And Tommy Lahren spoke to this too, ideologically. You know, she much more enjoys covering what she's covering here in Tennessee as opposed to Beverly Hills. And so,
are you suggesting Tennessee is more conservative than Beverly Hills? You're suggesting,
having never been to the other location, my money's on yes. I think there's some key ingredients there that are going to continue to attract, and help these companies stand up here. And you've got, you know, they're part of they're part of a creator class that, you know, ties into the music industry here and has been in this area for a while, and now is starting to become more prominent and noticeable. But it's also, you know, you've got, I mean, people are moving here, companies are moving here. And there are actually, these companies are more mobile than I think they've ever been. And so, again, the startup costs are lower here than if you're trying to start a media company in another market. So I think we're still in flyover country. I mean, there's still the coastal dominance, especially in that industry. But by the same token, I think there's, you know, again, I would say go knock on Shannon Terry's door. I mean, yeah. he's we keep banging on that drum, I guess, and rightly so. He's, you know, he's an example of the ability not to do it. You know, it's not like you did it once. He's done it multiple times, which I think, to me, all the more speaks to the ability to do it here.
This is going to be just, I just want your personal opinion on this, because, you know, he says, you write that Travis describes his own brand as smart, original, funny, and authentic. I would agree with at least three of those four. There's no question about that. But it's also some pretty basic media principles that I don't, like, we talk about them all the time. Enragement is engagement. Pandering to your base and sort of preconceived notions, which he admits in the story is part of the plan. These are sort of fundamental principles that can lead to success. Do you personally think that there's a pushback against that people are now, I acknowledge there's a certain cross-section of the population, both left and right politically, that just want to hear what they want to hear. There's fans of the Titans that only want to hear good content about the Titans. Like, this is not new to politics or sports, but I'm curious if you personally feel like that there is part of what the Nashville Business Journal does is report on stuff that, like, some people may hate the direction of the city. We've had polling on this. Some people like the direction of the city, but you're sort of just there to say, here's the direction we're going. Do you get a sense that people there's a pushback at all to this? Is it maybe just smaller on a local level? Is there, like, what's your personal opinion on that?
Pushback to keep elaborating on that a little bit.
So the style, the principles that sort of guide the success of all of these different companies, right? Which is, let's be loud, let's be engaged, let's kind of pander to a base that already wants this content anyway. Again, great business model. Is there another business model that could compete with that, that you find yourself consuming or whatever? Do you, again, I'm just asking for your personal opinion.
Yeah, I think, well, certainly my hope, right? But those habits are hard to break is my fear. It's like, man, I really should get off, you know, these, just scrolling through Instagram late at night, you know, and like, before you know it, subconsciously you've spent 30 minutes just scrolling, and then it's, you sort of snap out of it and you're like, wait a minute. So I think there's some habits that it's just going to take a lot of effort to untrain or retrain into. I do think, yeah, thinking about Nashville and the way it's going, there's a lot of people unhappy with it. Steve did some great reporting on the Imagine Nashville survey results that it's like, you know, sounding a louder note than ever, I think, on the direction that they see the city heading. And so, yeah, we're trying to, you know, the reporting that we try to do tries to see through that in the sense of, like, you know, love it or hate it, like, this is what is happening. These are the facts. This is what's happening. This is where things are going. And ideally, arm people with more of that info to have a more reasoned, thorough conversation and debate about that particular issue. But, I think so many of us now have been trained to be animated by the outrage, the outlandish, the loud, the brash, that it worries me that it's a little bit reflexive in that. And I think, again, it's almost, you kind of find yourself back in that spot, even if you don't want to be, you find yourself, it's a very slippery slope to consuming that info again, even though you didn't want to.
All right, we'll let you go on this. Adam, thank you so much for your time. Excellent work, excellent piece. Of course, everybody go subscribe to the Nashville Business Journal. But I want to ask the quote, hate is not a bad advertisement. That is from Clay. Do you think he means the people who hate him? Do you think he means the people who his audience hates? Or do you think he means both?
I think on the spot, I would choose both. But I think I don't know what percentage of the viewers or the readers are like the crowd that hates him. But there's some of that pull, and he's not the only one who has this effect, but there's some of that, like, you know, those folks are like, let's go see what he said about this. He's being talked about, and whether it's with flowery, praiseworthy adjectives or people are spitting out his name, those numbers count the same when he's thinking about audience and attention.
No question. Adam, thank you so much, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
That was Adam Sitchko of the Nashville Business Journal. And I'm curious, Steve, just in general, how many times do you think Eric Snyder, who's the managing editor of the Nashville Business Journal and Adam's editor, how many times do you think he feels compelled to write a short editorial on why they have a cover story?
I mean, it's not unheard of. And Eric writes stuff from time to time on the front of the Business Journal. I didn't find it as exceptional as you did. But
no, I don't think it's exceptional. I think it is indicative.
No,
the work they're trying to do.
And maybe of the fact that they know that it's going to be a controversial read. Yeah.
And honestly, I think they did a good job to try to remove some of the controversy. But that ultimately is my question for you, Steve. And we kind of touched on it a bunch of times in our conversation with Adam, which is, how do you write this story without acknowledging or addressing or even discussing? And I think they did it as good a job as you could possibly do of this, without addressing the controversy, without addressing the realities of what OutKick is doing. Again, I may totally agree on something Clay says. I may then totally disagree on something Clay says. But there is a truth and an agreed upon set of facts that we have to live by. So I'm curious, how do you do that, honestly?
You either have to decide from the outset that you are going to fact check every single piece of it or not, or provide some sort of kind of counterbalance. There's a list in there in the story of claims that Clay has made over the years, and I thought it was smart that they chose some stuff that is like deliberately fantastical in terms of saying that Joe Biden would not be the Democratic nominee, for example. Joe Biden is the Democratic nominee. I think it's a smart choice to just kind of do it that way and not have to go parenthetically after it and say, by the way, Clay was wrong about this, as Joe Biden has now won X number of delegates and blah, 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 blah. I mean,
you'd have to put a lot of things in parentheses in the story.
There would have to be a lot of parentheticals. And I think, you know, you either choose to do that or you choose not to do that. I have no problem with them not doing that. That's fine.
I agree.
Writing about this in a business context in Nashville, I think they're fine not wading into kind of like every ridiculous thing that Clay has ever said, or kind of like litigating COVID. I mean, I think they were, the way Adam wrote that section about Clay feeling very adamantly that he was correct about COVID, when, I mean, there are large parts of reality that says otherwise. And so
he might have been right about sports being played outside. I think he's completely probably right about that. But that's not why he was doing it at the time.
Right. And I think that, yeah, exactly. And I think that in order to kind of litigate all of that would create a story that was three times as long and that nobody would read and would feel as pedantic as, you know, possible. Because I think this is why you write that story. There's a lot of people that want to know about this that don't want to litigate every single outrageous thing that Clay says. And that's fine. That's absolutely fine.
Well, it really is, on an intellectual media business standpoint, it's fascinating to try to understand where we are as a country or as a society or as a community or as a city through the lens of what is popular in media. Because I do think there's multiple conversations here, right? There's conversations about the accuracy of his information. It even says in the story, like, people, and this is a quote, I believe, from an executive in sort of high level media, and he's basically says people almost decide you're right just because you wrote something rather than give it the same rigor as the New York Times. I think there are little lines in this story that hat tip or wink wink at sort of like everyone in this acknowledges what they're doing. They all know what they're doing, and I don't. That part of it, I don't think you need to tell folks. Now, the other half of me thinks you need to scream this part of it at the top of your lungs. And that is the part, that's where I'm torn on all of this, is like, from a business standpoint, this is an incredibly intelligent, incredibly hardworking, experienced, knowledgeable person who has built an extraordinarily successful business. And that is just a story you could tell. And that is what Clay has done.
Well,
you cannot argue any of those facts about.
And Clay's decision to navigate into the political side of this has been an incredibly smart business decision. I mean, and that's what it was a business decision. I mean, you and I both know people that have known Clay since law school and would argue with, I mean, how much Clay believes of what he says versus how much of it Clay actually thinks and believes in his heart. Is there a disconnect there, and does it matter?
I'd like to hope and believe that it still matters.
I'd like to hope and believe that it still matters too. I think that what we have seen, particularly in the rise of sort of like outrage culture, is that people lean into that because they know it gets them either clicks or eyeballs or viewers or listeners or whatever else.
Well, and this is ultimately one of my last questions to Adam. And I think ultimately the most interesting question about you called it the outrage machine. I do think this is ultimately the most interesting part of this, because he says in the story, Clay's like, look, if it's Biden who's elected or Trump who's elected, business is going to be good. I would argue if Biden's elected, business would be better, because then sort of the grievance identity politics stuff actually does better because your team's on the outside. And I think what they need to do, the one thing I would have done in the story, again, for those that do not know, Clay Travis was a staffer for multiple Democratic officials. He, I believe, was an Obama voter, something he said out loud multiple times. So, like, it is hard to sort of put the two personalities together. But at the same time, he's clearly on a team now. You cannot go visit a president at his home and be on the phone with him and be in Rush Limbaugh's chair and not be sort of on a team.
It is one of the great ironies of kind of partisan radio or partisan sort of, you know, opinionation. Well, that's a terrible word.
Opinionation. He's a writer, folks.
it is one of the great ironies of this situation that the thing that you are arguing for, in Clay's case, a restoration of a Trump presidency, Joe Biden is evil, Joe Biden should be impeached, Joe Biden should be out of office or whatever else. The irony is that it is significantly better for business if you are screaming from the outside, as you said. Political. This has always been the case. I mean, when you chart Limbaugh's rise was certainly within kind of the Reagan framework, but he became this just monster star during the Clinton administration. It is just, you can't sort of divorce the fact that he has an antagonist. Having a permanent antagonist in the White House is much better than cheerleading and trying and having to kind of answer for things like we're at the 4-year anniversary of Trump's bleach comment about COVID, and you know the amount of kind of just like ignoring certain aspects of the Trump presidency that these opinionators have had to do is pretty amazing, and it reminds you that they're much better off with him on the outside.
Well, and I would argue most political campaigns, left or right, you are almost always more effective as a challenger versus as an incumbent. It's an easier proposition in general to get elected or to at least gain popularity or to build a coalition or whatever. I again, going back to sort of where we're going from a media perspective, I do find it interesting that I think the social media element, smartphones, Trump coming along, you know, the reaction to a black president, I think it all sort of like is a moment. And I'm curious what happens after this moment, what it looks like. Because cable news, no one's watching cable news. And actually Clay alluded to this in the story. He said, look, cable news was a paradigm shift, right? In the 80s and 90s, it was a paradigm shift. Absolutely. Fantasy sports, huge paradigm shift. And he says that gambling was another huge paradigm shift in sports coverage and media. And I agree with that. Now that you see the way, like, look at ESPN, like, right? ESPN Bet is everywhere on everything. They had to go buy one because they couldn't even just have a partnership anymore. They had to actually go buy one. And again, probably smart business. He says he doesn't know if there's ever going to be another one. I think the other one, like, the House just passed a TikTok ban. Mike Johnson did something. Like, so media is going to be addressed. It's going to be addressed. And I'm curious, when Trump fades away, polarization still exists, but social media maybe is under regulation of some sort. Like, I'm curious what the next chapter looks like. I don't think we're done on a paradigm shift. Maybe it's AI, but I think there's another paradigm shift coming. And I'm just curious if that leads to a more nutritional diet, or do we go even further down the enragement rabbit hole and the brainstem? Like, do we go further down the Instagram brainstem addiction? You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
My bet is Foursquare on the ladder. It is not on the, I mean, not on a national level. I think that's all that penetrates.
Yeah. Yeah.
On a local level, I think it's different, but.
So it's, are you suggesting it's about building trust and then reinvesting resources into investigative reporting?
Maybe. You said it, not me.
NashvilleBanner.com, everybody. Also, if you'd like a great cup of coffee, Steve, where can the good folks of this town go?
You can go to 8th and you can go to Roast.
That's the same place, though, for the record. It's not two different
places. 8th and Roast.
Yeah, yes. It's one place. But you could also go to, confusingly, 8th and Roast on Charlotte.
Yes.
You can also do that. And, of course, you can pick up their beans at every grocery store near you. Make sure you check the local aisle just to make sure, in case it's not in the regular Big Bean aisle, because Ethan Roast is fighting against Big Bean. You know, that's what they're doing. Their beans are better. Go to Ethan Roast, everybody. I want to put you on the spot here, because this we're taping this on Thursday before the draft has started, and it'll come out Friday. So I want to know officially, according to Titans fan, longtime Miami Dolphins / Tennessee Titans diehard fan, what is it? This is out on Friday morning after the first round. What just happened? What just happened on Thursday night? What did the Titans do? Give me a prediction.
You know, I've been listening to a bunch of people. We're in the stupid portion of the media around us because everybody has run through 10 different mock drafts and whatever else. And
we're done with it.
And so the last stuff, the stuff that comes out the week of the draft is the crazy sort of what if draft day were real sort of things. And like all the scenarios of, you know, these people move up, these people move down, these people move up 15 slots and blah, 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 blah.
None of which is true.
All things being equal, I think the Titans pick seventh, and that Joe Alt is sitting there, and that they take the big lineman that is boring and good for the franchise.
I think they want to trade down desperately, but they can only trade down like a little bit, and so they trade down to 9 and they take Olafashinu out of Penn State. They still get their offensive lineman. But they add like a tiny little bit of capital, not as much as they would like to add by moving down further, but the Bears are the only team that'll work with them. So they move back a couple spots and they still take a guy that's almost as good as Joe Alt. That's my prediction. Sure to go wrong. I just wanted us to be on the record and then everybody tune in on Friday morning and listen to it.
What the hell are they talking about? Yeah, right. Meanwhile, the Titans have moved to right. 3 to take Marvin Harrison.
Oh, that's interesting.
Or
they move back to like 36 and they don't even pick in the first round.
Listen, in the truly crazy sort of piece of this, they have to draft alignment. They have to draft alignment. They do. They have invested in Will Levis being their franchise quarterback. They have to protect him, right?
Yeah.
That having been said, if they ended up with
Roma Odunze, yeah.
I would be the happiest person
okay.
on the planet. I think that guy is the
fantasy,
that guy's, that guy's
fantasy footballification of fandom.
That guy is the best receiver in the draft. He's better than Marvin Harrison.
Ooh, hot take.
And he's just one of these guys that catches everything that's thrown to him and is going to be, you know, is going to be just wildly productive for 10 years in the league.
We will have lots of NFL draft coverage. We already have a couple of guests lined up for you guys coming up over the next few weeks. You guys know what we do every single year. There's certain names that we talk to every single year about this stuff. And so we'll do that again this year over the course of the next month in May. We'll have a lot of really good coverage on what the Titans did and didn't do and how the coverage works and how the draft works and evaluating players. And honestly, there's just so much to cover with the draft. We're going to have a lot of sort of post-mortem for you, but not this week. This week, we're talking about outrage, which I'm sure no Titans fan will experience on Thursday evening. no matter what happens, someone will be pissed off about what the Titans have done. So
I would say one thing. I think the Titans fans are going to be happy no matter what. We have a new coach. There's optimism. It is the false optimism of the draft every year.
You sound like a Jets fan.
Unless they like trade out of the first round, even then,
if you stockpile second and third round picks and you totally change the depth in your roster, that's still a smart strategy for the Titans. So I agree with you. Every Titans fan should be excited with almost every strategy they deploy this weekend.
Yep.
Unless they trade up to draft a quarterback, almost anything they do is going to be good for the team. So. We shall see. Okay, special thanks to Adam Sitchko for coming on and giving us a few minutes. Of course, truly, the Nashville Business Journal is really good. It's really good stuff. If you care about sort of all this business stuff,
and
so go check him out.
Follow Sitchko. I mean, he doesn't tweet a lot, but Sitchko's a hell of a reporter, and just one of the best in town. He's a scoop machine on occasion, and he's just somebody that you ought to, if you care about media in Nashville, you ought to be paying attention to what Adam's doing.
Yep, so. Absolutely. All right. So go to 8th and Roast, sign up for a subscription in the Nashville Business Journal, go to nashvillebanner.com and make sure you check out all the great Titan show for all the draft coverage that you need this weekend. A football show. Of course, we'll have a live reaction. You can go check that out on the YouTube. Since you're listening to this on Friday, it's already up there. So you can go listen to our reaction to the Titans' first pick, however great or awesome or terrible it was. And we'll have coverage, of course, throughout the course of the entire weekend. A football show, 440 Sports YouTube page. You've got football and other F-words. You've got Hot Read Podcast, Music City Audible. If you are a Titans fan, we have all of it. We have all of the coverage you need. And maybe I'll just send a press release to Adam about how successful the company's doing. Otherwise, for Steve Cavendish, I am Braden Gall. Thank you guys for listening. Have a great weekend. This has been Lamestream Sports on the 440 Sports Network.